Blog Talk Radio.
Against my hollow bones, that rocks my soul. Oh, 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 oh. Looking back over my false dreams that I once knew, wondering why my dreams never came true. Is it because I'm black? Somebody tell me, what can I do? Oh, Lord. Oh, something is holding me back. Is it because I'm black? Yeah. In this world of no pity, I was raised. Mama, she worked so hard to earn every penny, yeah, yeah. Oh, Lord. Something is holding me back. Is it because I'm black? Because I'm black. Oh, somebody tell me, what can I do? Will I survive or will I die? You can make it if you try. tried so hard. We tried so hard. I want you to know that I don't speak for myself, but I speak for y'all too right now. You see, if you're half white, light brown skin, and a high yellow, you're still black. So we all got to stick together right now. This I want to say to you, my sisters and my brothers. Right on, sister. Right on, brother. Dig this. If we keep on pushing, y'all, oh, we got to make it a little bit further. We got to make it a little further. All we got to do is try, try, try. And some of us, we're trying so hard. We're trying so hard. We're trying so hard. We're trying so hard, so hard to be somebody. We're trying so hard, although they're holding us back. And it stands to reason that they're doing us like that. You know what? It is. I believe it's because we're black. But hey, we can't stop now. We can't stop now. We got to keep on, keep on, keep on, keeping on. We got to keep on, keeping on. I know and I know and I know that you know that I know it ain't right. It ain't right, it ain't right. That they hold us, hold us, hold us back. They're holding us back. They're holding us back. I wonder. Sometimes I sit down, and I wonder. I sit down and I think about it.
Sometimes people will tell you what you want to hear. People will tell you what they think you'll believe. And then they'll tell you the truth. From what I'm hearing from the Dolphins, from what I've read in the paper, I don't believe they're telling the truth. Ted Wells will get to the bottom of the truth, but I want to talk about a culture that was fostered in that locker room and was allowed to flourish. The Miami Dolphins locker room probably consists of 75-80% blacks. If you allow Richie Incognito to walk around in an open locker room and to use a racial epithet that most black Americans, all black Americans know the stigmatism and the hate and the vitriol that comes with that word. If you allow him to do that, you are encouraging him to do that. It has to go unchecked. I read, and I don't know, it's alleged that some black players said Richie Incognito was an honorary black. There's no such thing. This tells me everything I need to know about the Miami Dolphins locker room. How we got here and why we got here. Because so many people, if you don't understand it, because I'm 45, I grew up in rural South Georgia. Maybe I'm a disconnect with me, JB. Maybe it's me. Just ask your parents, ask your grandparents. The mountain that they climbed so a black person in America could have respect, could have dignity, and you allow this in an open locker room to take place is unacceptable. I'm so disappointed. I just hope that someone was misquoted. I hope I'm wrong. And they didn't allow Richie Incognito to say this racially charged word in an open locker room and go unchecked. That's unacceptable. I'm embarrassed for it because if he said that to Martin, Jonathan Martin, he didn't only say that, he's talking to you too. Because if you're black, you know what that word means.
You know what, Shannon, I would just say this.
And get a fresh new point of view. You can be more connected with another perspective.
Another perspective. Another perspective. Another perspective. Another perspective.
Looking for affordable quality furniture? Look to Furniture at 7707 in Chicago for all of your furniture needs. Furniture at 7707 South Ashland is a family-owned discount furniture mattress store. Furniture 7707 has served customers in the Chicagoland area and the surrounding suburbs. Their knowledge in furniture, mattresses, and appliances set them high above the competition. Furniture at 7707 is an authorized dealer of such brands as Ashley Furniture, Jackson Furniture, and Decor Rest, with over 450 different customizable fabrics and top grain leathers on over 90 different styles and much more. They are ready to work with your budget to get the merchandise you need with their available financing options and 90-day layaway program. For more information, call 773-783-7707. 773-783-7707.
Happy holidays to our seniors. For 22 years, we've been celebrating with our annual Seniors Breakfast. So on Saturday, December 7th, we're doing it again. Seniors, come out and enjoy a piping hot breakfast on us and enjoy the sounds of the season. We'll be at the House of Hope, 752 East 114th Street. That's 114th and the Bishop Ford Expressway. And seniors, if you can sing or dance, get there early to sign up for our Seniors Got Talents contest, which will be judged by your favorite WVON personalities. If you win, we've got cash, baby. There'll be live entertainment, celebrating the season, and plenty of door prizes. It's free for seniors, $5 for those under 65. We'll see you bright and early Saturday, December 7th from 8 a.m. till noon at the House of Hope, 114th and the Bishop Ford Expressway. We're able to do these great things for you thanks to partners like the University of Chicago Medical Center and AARP.
Go on, sweetie. Jump to Dad.
I'm not sure, Daddy. The water's cool.
There are moments in life that cause us to hesitate.
Jump right here.
Okay. Here I come.
I got you. Good job.
I did it. That was fun.
But once we take action, we're really glad that we did. If you're thinking about selling your home, don't hesitate. Interest rates are low and buyers are in the market. Every market's different. Call a Realtor today and visit Realtor.com. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Do you work for a company that blocks websites you want to visit?
Oh, this time about to get and no money for to go down there.
Yeah.
So keep your eyes on the prize.
out of sight, out of sight, out of sight. Hi, y'all. Hey, hey, hey. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Hey, what a beautiful day. They said it's going to rain, it's going to snow. Might be a tornado. Everything's happening today. So, good morning. Thank God for another day. Talk of Chicago, 1690, WVON. You're listening to Coffee, Tea, and a Conversation with me, Dorothy Wright-Tillman. We're here this morning. I brought something special for y'all, but I'm not going to start playing until about 10 minutes to 7. So you can wake everybody up. I bought a special tape on Dr. King. And I brought it because I was going through some stuff. And I said, let me see. Let me listen to this tape. It's an economic tape that Dr. King had done. And, you know, and as I listen to the tape, you'll think that he's talking about right now. Then you really get an understanding why Dr. King was murdered, because he was talking about the economics of black people, reparation economics, and some other things. And he talked about the unemployment rate among our people being 15%, and it's even higher now. He talked about when he was in India, how the people sleeping on the streets and how the Indians were dominating our community. That's a lot of stuff. I said, well, let me play that, give them my guest, let Dr. King be my guest this morning. So you need to wake up your friends and let them know that Dr. King is my guest this morning. We've got to make sure that we play some of him and just kind of talk about it. Because one of the things that I am concerned about is blacks being without sanctuary. We are still without sanctuary. Don't let nobody fool you. We are without sanctuary. People do anything to us that they want to, and there's no one or nothing there for us to have as a sanctuary. Our leadership, our business, political, religious, all seem to turn a deaf ear. So I wanted to play him because I'm going to, in the next few weeks, really be talking. You know, we're getting into the holidays and we're getting into the anniversary of the bus boycott and where are we at now? What did we do? What kind of actions did we take? And what do we have to do now? When you look at what happened to McBride and the young man who was murdered, the basketball player, football player, the athlete who knocked on somebody's door, had an accident and somebody killed them. You look at the young man who was killed because he had his music up too loud. And you look at Trayvon Martin. You look at black folks still without sanctuary. One of the reasons I'm going to tell y'all, because I'm going to tell you something that happened. I spoke at Columbia College Thursday, and I really do want to tell you about really without sanctuary, what I witnessed, but also in witnessing that. But I was so happy, you know, I want to just talk about, we were really doing an analysis of the Django with the students and those who came out of Columbia. And it was really interesting, and I'm going to talk about that. I know some of y'all don't have time to talk about what they doing this man about the health insurance. I told y'all that stuff wasn't the greatest thing in the world. While we over there hollering and everything, we are going on as a people. There's a report, I'm going to try to have Ebony find it for me, because I didn't bring it, about the workforce in black people. I think we're like 31% of the workforce or 31% down. I don't remember exact numbers, but I will try to find it. And it's the lowest it's been in a long, long time. And the question is, why is it so low of our people being in the workforce? And who have the job who are not there? And it's because a lot of black folks worked in government. And we're doing some research. I'll try to get to you next week, maybe, if I don't get it today. But especially next week. Government. Let's start from the city. How many black folks are in city government? Not that many. State government, federal government, all of these agencies where blacks used to hold different things, whether it was with public housing. A lot of black folks had a lot of jobs in public housing. At the CTA, how many black folks that was working in CTA, both driving the buses and the administration? Your teachers in education, how many folks had positions in education? And then a lot of your federal buildings. How many blacks had that? You know, a lot of blacks became middle class because they were able to access government and to work for government. And then you go to your federal government. As the older ones retire or they change their position or shut it down, There's no one replacing them, because they're replacing us with other folks. One of your largest groups of blacks was working for the Human Service Department, which used to be the poverty program that started under Lyndon Johnson. And the poverty program started under Lyndon Johnson after Dr. King was really talking and pushing some of the things he was talking about, poverty in the black community, the Negro community, as he always has said. And so Johnson gave us the poverty program, and out of the poverty program, it became Model Cities for Model Cities Human Service. And most of your leadership in those positions was black people. And a lot of them got a chance to move and become middle class. And I remember when they closed down the Human Service office down there on Prestigio Court down there, as they call that community, something else down there now, by the lake, River North, as they call it. But it was down there. It wasn't River North then. And I fought when they moved it in another community, and I told them they was moving it to a Hispanic community. I said, that's not fair. It should be more neutral. And most of your leadership in that now is Hispanic. You don't have blacks. And because we give up our moral authority and our rights, we let people talk stuff to us, and we start believing it and not understanding. We start always playing second fiddle or feeling useless unless we got somebody else in front of us. So they always want to put somebody there. I told you last week the man that won the governorship in Virginia would not have won if not been for black people. Barack would not be the president of the United States today. He would not have gotten the electoral college if those black folks in those major cities had not turned out. Ron Emanuel would not be the mayor of the city of Chicago if he had not received, you know, black votes. He won that many votes from going to a runoff, I think maybe 3,100 votes or something, and he received 23% of the votes that was cast, 23% of the votes, I think, that was cast. So he wouldn't be in there if black folks had not given. Daley wouldn't have stayed if black folks had not voted. Quinn would not be in office if black folks did not vote for Quinn. Edgar stayed in office because black folks voted for him. Thompson stayed in office because black folks voted. Percy, your senator, stayed in office because black folks voted. So when you look at our votes, and now what you do, they don't say our vote doesn't count anymore. It's an omission of our vote. They said the Hispanics, the women, the gays. They say everything but black people. So you begin to think that your votes, our votes is one of the most important votes it is, the most important constituency it is. And right at the same time, we don't get our votes and stuff leveraged. And we are once again at an election time. And we so understanding. Right now, everybody pushing for immigration and other stuff. But what about H.R. 40, repairing the damage that happened to black people? A Marshall Plan to rebuild our community. And one of the things we're going to be trying to do, hope we can get it over social media. I told him we've got to figure out to get our people to begin to push and really go to work, make them really do H.R. 40. That was a study of slavery. And then look at those who don't know about the Marshall Plan that happened in Europe should get over there and look at it. I might try to get somebody on to talk about what happened with that Marshall Plan. And to look and see what happened with the Marshall Plan, how they rebuild communities. America's paying money to people every day. Billions of dollars they're paying. And they bring other people from other countries and set up and repay their damage. And they set them up in our community as they play reparation to these different people, and they bring them in and they set them up, and they don't have to go through all the stuff that you have to go through. We talked about the drug trade last week and how that drug was coming from Mexico and everywhere. And I told you that one of the reasons why we don't understand our fight and we can't get knocked down is because currency and country. You saw Daley and you saw Ron Emanuel over in Mexico this week. Maybe they was negotiating about sending their people back. No. Was it negotiating about stealing the drug trade come? Maybe. What was it? They talking about the global. I talked to you about follow the bullets. Follow the bullets and follow the trains and follow the communities that they're coming over as they depopulate. They did Lake South Shore, shoot, black folks running, white folks buying their houses, other folks buying their houses, and they running and running and running, and they opened up all the way to 90-something. I told you about the Pullman USBA bank. Out there, you know, I told y'all that there was only two places that was going to put the presidential library. It was going to be in Pullman or down at Michael Reese, and that Run wasn't going to have it down at Michael Reese, so they going to out there. That's why you see all this movement about Pullman, because that's where they planning on putting it. And you know, and as they run folks away, if you go out there, you'll see another population in these bullet-ridden communities, but they're moving in. Now, I can't understand how other folks can come in and be all right, and we're not all right in these so-called bad communities. It doesn't make any sense. So those are some of the things. I'm going to play some Dr. King. The tape I got is about 20-something minutes long, but it's so much to talk about. But I wanted to at least give you a feel for some of the stuff he's talking about, too, that he's talking about in this tape, about the poverty. And I got to find what they're talking about, our workforce. We're at the lowest of our workforce in a long time, and you're not looking at that. You think that you're the only one that's hurting, but when you go from a 40% some blacks in the education department to 10%, when they turn on all the house, see what's happening to us now, and you're sitting by without paying attention, and I'm going to tell you the same thing I told you when you were getting ready, when you allowed them to tear down public housing. Across the country, really, they tore it down. No other race would have allowed that many of their people to be depopulated. But they make us hate, and it comes from post-traumatic slavery syndrome. So I'm not giving up, and I'm not giving up hope. I know we're going to be all right. We just got to begin to take step by step with some solutions and put something in place that we can do. No brawl. We got to focus on something. We got to make America pay attention to H.R. 40 and make America pay attention to repairing the damage in terms of how do you build a Marshall Plan. They start discussing that and discussing what happened to us in slavery. You can't run away from that. That's why I introduced the ordinance. I didn't introduce the ordinance to get no pennies from them. I introduced it to gather information so that we can begin a fight for a Marshall Plan, for our community, for our children, for our future. And what did you have across the country? I think we had about, I'll tell you, several cities did the same thing. And they understood how strong that was, and that's why we had this fight. And that's why Dr. King was murdered. So I will be playing Dr. King this morning, and I want you to make sure that you listen to what he's saying, because we have to really look at what's going on. We are crazy to sit like a bump on the log while people wiping us out and our children. It makes it doesn't make any sense here. We can't take this. And I know when we fight, we win. Jesse says that every Saturday. And it's absolutely true. We fight, we win. But they make you feel like you're too tired and it's all over. If it's all over, then where are you going without sanctuary? We don't have it. We got to fight. When we fight, we win. And we don't have to take this. And I'm going to tell you something. I'll probably tell you when I come back over the break, because more people will wake up. And some of you came out to Columbia, and I want to tell you about a fight between a young black man and a white man in the audience when I come back. And that made me know about this. Really, really, I was already feeling how our people are with our sanctuary. But when you have the former football player, Jonathan, from North Carolina, who was murdered because he had an accident, and you have McBride, and you have the other people, Trayvon, and you have the young man who was listening to music. And every time we look around, young men getting shot, killed, you say we're still without sanctuary. And I don't care what you have. You can think you got money walking around, you safe. You black. Oprah found that out when she left ABC. She found that out. So we're going to talk about some things, play Dr. King, try to take some calls in between, because he's going to be my guest. And we're going to really talk about without sanctuary. And what I want you to do is tell me, don't give me a whole bunch of stuff. Well, we need to pool our resources, put our money, yeah, but we need to have access to capital. And we need to have access to our tax dollars. Because if we just put that together, our own, just our little resources and note, get the money that government's supposed to give us, other folks are getting money that we're not getting, we have a right. When they talk about the TIF, I think they was talking in the paper where Free Radio, I'm talking about they want the TIF money to go to the schools. The truth of the matter is the TIF money was supposed to be in those communities to rebuild those communities. We had 21 TIFs in the Third Ward. I want to know how have the community been rebuilt. And the money has been used to help the businesses, help develop black businesses around in that community too. But no, you're going to play that. Don't play that. Put it here, put it there. No, those that money was put there for blighted communities. Are those communities still blighted? That's where the money was supposed to go. And then you had some other stuff that they had going on. You don't have to ask permission from Ron to have an elected school board. Put it on the ballot. Go out and get some petitions. And the truth of the matter is the state legislator gave the power of education to the mayor. They gave it to the mayor. They gave him all the power to appoint the boards and do everything that they don't even have to come before city council. So there's a lot of stuff. The budget went through without a hitch because nobody asked the real question. They played some little games, talked about the cigarette tax, talked about the police for a minute. But the real economic piece, the procurement, I don't even know what the procurement came down because I didn't hear anything about economics. You listen to Talk of Chicago 69 WVON. Our number is 773-591-1690. We are streaming live on www.wvon.com. We are also on iHeartRadio for those of you who want to listen out there on iHeart. You know, I listen when I travel. It's real clear. And sometimes I just listen when I be at home. It's a very clear iHeartRadio. We're on Facebook. We're also on Blog Talk. So you can listen to us on Blog Talk. Type in Coffee Tea, Blog Talk, Coffee Tea, you know, Dorothy Tillman. You can get Blog Talk, or you can get Jimmy Lee Underground, or you can get me. So we're on Blog Talk, Black Planet, Facebook, and Group Place Facebook. I'm trying to get my tweets up a little bit. I'm not up to date on the like, but I'm gonna get it, y'all. So get your coffee, get your tea, and I got to tell your friends, wake up and come on and talk to me because I got a special guest named Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I'll be right back.
The Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
My,
take all the about me, yeah. And no money for to go down there.
Yeah.
Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on,
yeah.
Hold on.
Oh!
Say it loud. Wake up, y'all. Coffee, tea, and a conversation with me, y'all. I tell you, I'm black and I'm proud. I'm so proud to be black. I don't want to be nobody or nothing else, in spite of whatever I got to go through, even with the ones who have post-traumatic slavery syndrome. I've always told people, what happens to black folks? White folks can't do nothing to black folks without them putting black folks in front to do it. They always got to shield themselves with black folks. Almost everything that happened to us, there were some Negroes who was willing to be a part of that. Right now what's going on in the black community, you got black folks in front. And I talked about many things before we went on. I told y'all to wake up everybody because I'm on. Dr. King will be my guest this morning as we talk about economics and some other things. Evan, I want you to find me this thing from the Labor Department where I think they said we're 31% in the workforce or 31% down. I was reading it and I didn't bring it with me. First time we've been that low. Black folks used to work a lot in government and now we're not there anymore. And some of the other, and we don't have our own businesses because when we have our own businesses, we hire black folks. That's why one of the things we were trying to do as we had developed an area to bring in black businesses. When y'all go down to the Loop, I know y'all, South Loop, y'all think y'all be hanging out. That's a black business that we made sure that was built. Told Mr. White, Mr. White's gone, God rest his soul. Mr. Dobb, and we can't keep these hot seats. We got to build the first African-American suite in the city of Chicago. And that was probably one of the last buildings that we did. We were also trying to do a conference in a hotel on 51st Street from King Drive over, from 50 to 51st over. That was going to be a large thing owned by black people. These folks understood economics, and it was a whole area that was designated just for the development of black people. That's why you had the Parkway Ballroom saved. And it's just a lot of stuff. And I'm only saying that to say that if black folks are given an opportunity to take advantage of, we put together the African American Home Builders Association, and we began to. That was equivalent to the American Home Builders, because American Home Builders was building in our community and let one developer develop. We said, let's put together our own, and we put together 10 developers with 10 architects, and all most of the workers was like we had a 70-30, but most of them had 80% or more, and they built those houses over there. If you look at the house, they was going to march all the way across them. Lots have been dedicated to the African American Home Builders. I said, if you give folks an opportunity, they will do. And we said, from this area to this area is designated for black culture. But this man, the powers to be, said, wait a minute. Black folks are doing this stuff. We better stop that. The same way you got 10% teachers in the schools and all the other things that's going on with us today. We're Without Sanctuary. Now, I'm going to tell you what happened. And maybe I'll tell you at the 7 o'clock hour so more people can tell you, some more folks. So I'm going to take some a few phone calls, and then I'm going to go right to Dr. King. And I'll be back to Dr. King, then you, Dr. King, then you. Benjamin, how you doing this morning?
Good morning, Mama. How you doing?
I'm just fine. How you doing?
Mama, I'm doing good out here in River Forest. Mama, don't forget on the 29th, the Tillman family, we would like you guys to come to our coat giveaway here in River Forest.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to have you to get on. Evan is back. Evan is going to write it down. She wasn't here last week. So
okay, that's probably, and I told her that. Mama, I just, firstly, Mama, I really only have nothing to say. It was nice to talk to you the other day while you was on the Cliff Kelly Show teaching us about history, and I just want to thank you so much for that, Mama. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm glad because I'm going to try to play some, keep on listening. I'm going to play some Dr. King.
Okay, Mom, I just called to tell you I love you. I want you to have a nice day, okay?
I love you, too. I tell you. Cam.
Good morning, Alderman Tillman.
Good morning, Cam.
Yeah, I just want to say that you are so right on this morning, you know, especially your comments that when we fight, we win.
Right, right.
And I want to call your attention to a fight that we just recently won. I know your listeners are aware of the Norfolk Southern Railroad expansion.
Oh, you know, I read about that, Cam. I don't think that was a win, but I'm not going to take it away from you. I see where they said they would put some money in the schools, and then they would deal with the smog and the smoke, and then the folks taking folks home. They got a bigger thing. The way they played with slavery, I don't know whether you won that fight. That was a pacifier. That's why I didn't say too much about it. I don't know whether that was a victory, Cam. We have to talk about that in person.
Yeah, you're exactly right. We did not win what we wanted. That was economic enhancement for the community. We were pushing for $17 million for the community.
But even $17 million, listen to me, Cam.
Mm-hmm.
When we passed the Orton, the slave era disclosure, was so
right.
These people could write down all of their slavery stuff,
right.
Down what they had, so we could put together, that's what we had to commit it together, Andy Thompson, everybody, put together this whole Marshall Plan. Norfolk Road, the railroad road in slavery is so deep, that's a drop in the bucket. I saw the little thing that they did, but I didn't mention it too much. I said follow the railroad. They're going to give the people a certain amount of money for their houses. But they're moving on, and I'm not so clear. I looked at what you gave me, but I don't see where they have really, truly came clean about their role in slavery.
They did not. You're exactly right.
And the Orton said if you don't give you don't put down what you did in slavery, then your contract is null and void.
That's exactly right.
And
they did fill out a report, but you're exactly right.
And their contract should have been null and void.
The reparation argument. But what we did do is force them to retrofit all their equipment when they were not going to do anything.
Yeah,
just
but
bringing the issue of reparations up forced them to address the community in somewhat of a more positive way. When they had planned to do absolutely nothing.
Yeah, but
so that, when I said that's the victory we had, is that we just forced them to do the right by the community in regards to the environmental issues.
Yeah, but Cam, I'm gonna come on one of your meetings that you have. We're gonna have to talk about that because the whole purpose of some folks thought wasn't no teeth in the ordinance, but it was. Because it said that's how we was able to stop Lehman Brothers. We took millions of dollars from they got knocked off doing the they couldn't even do the toll road because they didn't feel all right. The thing was to gather information from these people so we can go out and get a Marshall Plan together for our community. But they got away. Now they think they've done something. I tell you what, Ron Emanuel hasn't done that for the Jewish community. They don't play like that.
Yeah, we're not finished with them by long shot. And in fact, Alderman Tillman, last Sunday, about 25 community organizations met to start an organization called Operation Strengthen the Disclosure, to strengthen your disclosure that you put on books that would mandate anytime an organization comes to the city to do the contract, they'll be mandated to pay funds into an economic enhancement fund.
Well, I'm going to tell you what, Cam, what I would like to do before we discuss, I want to come in and talk to y'all group and really go over, because, see, we got
appreciate that.
Yeah, because we got a lot of cities, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Pittsburgh, Wayne County. We got about 20 cities, Milwaukee, that have the economic disclosure in the whole. So I'm going to come in and talk to y'all about that, because I think they really got away. They got away with this mess.
They have not gotten away yet, because it's not over until we say it's over.
Well, let's talk, Cam. Let's talk, okay? But I saw it, and I don't want to take the, I don't want to knock the win out of the victory, but I think we ought to talk about that. Okay?
Thank you, Audrey.
Love you much. Okay. What I want to do now is we're going to play, I'm going to get Reverend Weatherspoon, then we're going to go to playing some of the Dr. King, and then we're going to, Reverend Weatherspoon, hurry, I want to play some Dr. King, Reverend Weatherspoon. How you doing?
God bless you, daughter.
God bless you, too.
Yeah, thank God for what you're doing, but we definitely need to meet, at least on the west side. I don't know when we're going to meet. I know your schedule is busy.
Well, I know you had a great birthday. I heard about it. Dan and Davis and everybody came. Even Courtney came over there.
Yeah, we had a great time. We celebrated the whole month. I thought the whole month of November.
Okay. Well, I want you to listen because I'm going to play some Dr. King.
Okay, God bless.
God bless you, too. Those who know that I was a field staff organizer for Dr. King. And most folks who talk about him, I tell folks, you can't talk about what we did. It wasn't the movement that made what happened to our community. Those who reap the education and political and economic benefit of that movement is responsible for the destruction of our community because they got the resources and they moved out and started thinking they was better than somebody or thinking they got something because they were smart, but not because of the struggle and fight. Because we didn't just talk. We always had a mission in mind with Reverend Bevel and everybody to move forward and do what we had to do. And you had all of our different organizations working and moving and coming down different roads, but with one thing in mind, and that was the liberation of black people. And when I tell you they killed Dr. King because he was talking about economics, and black folks are still with our sanctuary, I want to play some studs. I'm going to play some Dr. King, and I'm going to try to get through, before the show is off, the whole tape. So you can wake your friends up, 773-591-1690, streaming live, www.vion.com. We also on iHeartRadio, and we own Blog Talk. My leader, Dr. King, lay back and listen, drink your coffee, drink your tea. Courtney, this is very important. I think it's apropos to play him this morning. Courtney's over there. Okay, I think it's very apropos that we play Dr. King this morning. And you're going to think that you – should I take another call, Courtney? Are you going to think that you're in and back then, Courtney, I'm going to take another call while we're doing that. Okay? Greg, how you doing?
Good morning, Emma.
Good morning, Greg.
You know what? I was listening to what you were talking about. What disturbed me, I was listening to a woman who was part of the Bush administration comparing the Iraq War and Hurricane Katrina with the health care rollout. And I was sitting there thinking, I saw Harold Ford Jr. sitting there thinking, nobody's going to say anything. Nobody's going to challenge her on that. What bothered me about that, I'm like, lady, those are lives lost. I say, this is about the health care rollout. I say, you can't compare the loss of life with the health care rollout. I mean,
when
you get caught up in a political party, you get real stupid, you know, on both sides.
Right,
on both sides.
Yeah, because, you know, black folks, we're the only ones that worry about party over our people. You know,
right.
And our people is first and foremost. I think that when we had Senator Brookins, he did more for us than anybody we had. We had the Brook Amendment and a lot of other things. You know, so we got to look at what's good for our people.
I agree with you 100%. It just disturbed me that you're comparing the 1,900 people lost in Hurricane Katrina and 6,000 soldiers lost in Iraq on a lie with the health care rollout. I said, this is what happens when you get caught up in a political party. You get blatantly stupid.
Well, it's just like they try to compare everything else to slavery and what we went through. So, Greg, I want you to lay back and listen to Dr. King.
I'm going to listen to it now.
Okay. Oh, I want y'all to hear Dr. King, my leader, Dr. King.
Yes, sir.
Because no lie can live forever.
Yes, sir.
How long? Not long.
How long?
Because you shall reap what you sow.
Yes, sir.
How long? Not long.
How long?
My brothers and sisters, in the struggle for equality, for justice, for love, we welcome you once again to this, another edition of Martin Luther King Jr., and SVLC speak.
I would like to use as a subject from which to speak and giving a kind of broad outline of the problems we face here in our nation and in the world. I would like to use as a subject America's greatest moral dilemma. And in the beginning, I would like to say that racial injustice is still the Negro's burden and America's shame. And we must see racism for what it is. It is the myth of the inferior race. It is the notion that one race has a level of purity that is deprived of another race. It is a notion in the final analysis that that is something basically worthless about a people, and the notion that that is something basically wrong with the being of the people. And the ultimate logic of racism is genocide. What if one says that another individual, because of his race, cannot eat at a lunch counter with him, cannot have an adequate job, cannot live next door to him, then he's saying in substance that that individual or that race does not have the right to exist, the right to live, or the right to survive. And honesty impels me to admit tonight that racism is still alive in all too many areas of our nation. And it is still alive in the lives of all too many people. Now, so often we hear during this period about the white backlash, and there are those who talk about this as something new in our society. They think of it as something that came into being a year or two or three years ago. But I must honestly say that the white backlash is nothing new. It is merely a new name for an old phenomenon. It is an expression of the same ambivalence, the same vacillation that has characterized American society ever since a black man was brought to this nation in chains. We read on the Statute of Liberty that America is the mother of exiles. But it doesn't take us very long to see that America has been the mother of its white exiles from Europe. But it has not evinced the same maternal concern for its black exiles who were brought to this nation in chains from Africa. And it is no wonder that the Negro in one of his sorrow songs could sing, "Sometimes I feel like a motherless child." What sense of rejection, what great sense of estrangement caused the people to use such a metaphor? Well, you see, America has constantly made a step forward on the question of racial justice, but at the same time there was usually a backward step. This is the problem. This is the ambivalence. This is the vacillation. And there has never been a single solid, determined commitment on the part of our nation on the whole question of genuine equality for the Negro. In 1863, for instance, the Negro was freed from the bondage of physical slavery through the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation. But the Negro was not given land to make that freedom meaningful. And it was something like having a person unjustly imprisoned for many years, and finally the day comes when it is revealed that the person was innocent of the charge. And then someone comes up and says, now you are free. But at the same time, that person who has been unjustly imprisoned is given no money, a bus fare to get to town, is given no clothes to put on his back, nothing to get started in life all over again. Every code of jurisprudence would take a stand against this. But this is exactly what happened to the Negro in America. He was freed from slavery, but he was left there penniless, illiterate, landless, with nowhere to go. And at the same time, the nation was giving away, through an act of Congress, millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which said in substance that America was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor, but it absolutely refused to undergird the black man with an economic floor, even though he had been in slavery for 244 years. And so emancipation for the Negro was really freedom to hunger. It was freedom to the winds and rains of heaven. It was freedom without bread to eat and without land to cultivate. It was freedom and famine at the same time. But not only that, in 1875, the nation passed a civil rights bill and refused to enforce it. In 1964, the nation passed an even weaker civil rights bill, and even to this day has failed to enforce it in all of its dimensions. In 1954, the Supreme Court of our nation rendered a decision declaring segregation unconstitutional in the public schools. And today we stand some 13 years away from that decision, and yet less than 12% of the Negro students of the South are attending integrated schools. And if we continue at this pace, it will take another 95 years to integrate the schools. And then we could go on beyond that, where we hear and see suburban politicians speaking eloquently against open housing. And yet at the same time, they contend that they are not racist.
I see we're going through Dr. King, Dr. King. I thought we needed to play that this morning. I'm going to try to finish that whole sermon for my show as I take calls in between. I probably got about 15 more minutes on that particular speech. So you can wake your people up and tell them to wake up, that Dr. King is our guest this morning. He's really, in essence, is talking about how blacks are without sanctuary. We're still without sanctuary. And Cam, if you're still listening, know that I think what you did was great. We just want to talk about to make it a little further. Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON, 773-591-1690. We're streaming live on www.wvon.com. We're also on iHeartRadio. We're on Facebook, group Facebook, and we're on Blog Talk. So wake up, everybody, and tell them, get your coffee, get your tea. I'll be right back, and come on back and talk to me and listen to Dr. King. Be right back.
WBON.
People will tell you what you want to hear. People will tell you what they think you'll believe, and then they'll tell you the truth. From what I'm hearing from the Dolphins, from what I've read in the paper, I don't believe they're telling the truth. Ted Wells will get to the bottom of the truth, but I want to talk about a culture that was fostered in that locker room and was allowed to flourish. The Miami Dolphins locker room probably consists of 75-80% blacks. If you allow Richie Incognito to walk around in an open locker room and to use a racial epithet that most black Americans, all black Americans, know the stigmatism and the hate and the vitriol that comes with that word. If you allow him to do that, you are encouraging him to do that. It has to go unchecked. I read, and I don't know, it's alleged that some black players said Richie Cognito was an honorary black. There's no such thing. This tells me everything I need to know about the Miami Dolphins locker room. How we got here and why we got here. Because so many people, if you don't understand it, because I'm 45, I grew up in rural South Georgia. Maybe I'm a disconnect with me, JB. Maybe it's me. Just ask your parents, ask your grandparents. The mountain that they climbed so a black person in America could have respect, could have dignity, and you allow this in an open locker room to take place is unacceptable. It's, I place this, I'm so disappointed. I just hope that someone was misquoted. I hope I'm wrong. And they didn't allow Richie Incognito to say this racially charged word in an open locker room and go unchecked. That's unacceptable. I'm embarrassed for it because when he said, if he said that to Martin, Jonathan Martin, he didn't only say that, he's talking to you too. Because if you're black, you know what that word means.
You know, Shannon, I'll just say this.
Good morning, evening, friend. Here's your friendly announcer. I have serious news to pass on to everybody. What I'm about to say could mean the world's disaster, could change your joy and laughter to tears and pain. Is that love in need of love today? Don't delay, send yours in right away. Hey, born round, breaking many hearts. Stop it, please, before it's gone too.
Difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind.
I don't mind, I don't mind, I don't mind. I don't mind. I've been to the mountaintop. I've been to the mountaintop. He allowed me to look over, and I've seen the promised land. I might not get there with you, but we as a people will get to the promised land. Dr. King was willing to give his life up. He was certainly the Christ. You want to be like Christ? I'll give my life for my people. I'll go to the stake. I'll bear my cross, because I know that if they take me out, that my people are going to make sure that they reach back and pull the rest of us over. When Dr. King talked about the mountaintop and talking about I might not get there with you, but we as a people will get to the promised land. Those of us who know Dr. King kind of knew in his naiveness he's really did believe, and all of us had that faith, that our people who opened those doors over would pull the rest of blacks in. But somehow they got in and said, I made it on my own. And they got a whole little attitude and have just kicked our brothers and sisters to the side. But it's that time, wherever you are in the country, in the world, in the state, in the city, and everybody that's over there, take a deep breath, a real deep breath. It is that time to feel so proud. Black, 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 black. Courtney, y'all ready over there? Black, 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 black. Does that feel good? That feel good. That feel good. Because black folks are afraid to be black. You know, I'm playing my leader today. I'm going to try to get most of them through. So you can wake up everybody and tell them. And we're dealing with several things here. I thought you need to listen to Dr. King, because what he's talking about then, we're dealing with now. We're also talking about with our sanctuary, which we're going to pick back up next week, about how black folks still don't have sanctuaries and what's going on with us. I thank Cam for calling in, talking about what happened, how they was able to use reparation ordinance with the railroad, even the railroad played games. I'm glad they had something to hold on and hold their hands to, because we have several cities who have passed that reparation ordinance. San Francisco, L.A., Pittsburgh, Wayne County, Michigan, in Detroit, Berkeley, Milwaukee, and several others who passed it. And one of the things we have got to do is to get back on H.R. 40 and to also make them come on up with this Marshall Plan for black people. So those are some things we're talking about. And we're talking about McBride and how black folks are without sanctuary. And the fact that we are 70, we are 40% in the school system, and how our people are not working in economics. And that's why they murdered Dr. King. I'm going to take two calls, and I'm going right back to Dr. King. Number 773-591-1690. We're streaming live, www.von.com. And we're also on iHeartRadio. We're on Blog Talk. We're on Facebook, Group Facebook, Black Planet. And we're also on Black Planet, and we're also on Twitter. Maurice, make it real quick, because I want to try to play Dr. King tape. How you doing?
Yes, ma'am, I'm doing very well. Maurice Nichols on the West Side. Sister, it's a good day for black America to communicate and cooperate.
Okay.
On sanctuary. Sister Dorothy, in the real world, you cannot have sanctuary without economic security.
I agree with economics, and I think I addressed it up front. Even though you put your money together, we have a right to our taxes. Dr. King is talking about in terms of what this government did.
Correct, correct.
Uh-huh. So that's why I got this tape, and I'm glad you listened.
The government money, the TIF money, they're messing us out of TIF. We got to go the whole shebang, Sister Dorothy. You be blessed, all
right? Thank you, Maurice. I got to go. You
and by the way, there used to be an animal called the dinosaur. For some reason, this animal would not or could not change. As a result, he is no longer with us. Do you think that could happen to people who won't change?
Well, let's talk. Keep listening now, and I want to get as much as Dr. King as possible. Just trying to take some calls.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Trying to take some calls before I go back to Dr. King. Tanya.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm fine. How you doing?
I can't complain.
Okay.
Calling from 75th, a social service agency where Melanie Anowinski and Stacey Anowinski are the head there. And we just want to talk a little bit about the veteran services that we're offering.
Tanya, you know what I want you to do? I want you to call me next week because I'm playing Dr. King today. And I really want to talk about the veterans. I want to have more time. So call me next Saturday, too, because I want to talk about your service. What is your phone number?
Our phone number is 773-721-7088.
Okay, and call me next week, and I'll give you about 10 minutes to talk about that, okay?
I'll be more than happy. You have a blessed day.
Thank you, Tanya. Thank you so much. I wanted to make sure that Tanya got through. Trudy, how you doing this morning?
Just fine, and you, how you doing?
I'm all right.
I got a quick question. I listened to an interview the other day with some sororities, and they said they have made a pledge to push Greek history. You can find that disturbing.
Well, you know, if you talk about Greek, the Greeks learned most of their stuff from Africa, so you got to go
to
a lot of other African stuff. But right now, we got a lot of stuff going on in this country that we need to be pushing for as a people, and I hope that we can pull all of, they call themselves Greek organizations, we can pull all of them together so we can work
on
behalf of black people.
You know, my point is that, you know, you were saying that the people that got the education didn't do what they're supposed to do. And like in Greek history, their gods are Thoth and Mercury, and which that's not true. The real god is Tahuti. They went down there and stole everything.
Well, you know,
so that's why I think it's a shame for them to do that.
Well,
they should be pushing comedic history.
Well, I want them to call me next week, and I want you to keep on listening to Dr. King because I pulled his economic tape out because I thought we needed it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, and I'm going to try to get through all of it. It's got about 15 or 20 more minutes for it to go. Pam, please call me back. I'm sorry I had you online so long. So now I'm going to go back to Dr. King. I want you to keep listening to Dr. King as he talk about this whole economic piece. You're going to think we're still in the same place as we were yesterday. So Martin Luther King Jr., my leader, is my guest this morning, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
It is merely a new name for something very old. The fact is that America has been backlashing on the question of genuine equality for the black man for more than 300 years. Now this has made for great disappointment. It has made for great despair and even great bitterness in the Negro community. The harvest of violence that we see in our cities today is a result of seeds of neglect, denial, oppression, and injustice planted many, many years in the past. Now everybody knows my philosophy and my deep belief in the theory and the method of nonviolence. I believe in it firmly, and this is why I continue to say that it is my strong conviction that nonviolent resistance is the most potent weapon available to the Negro in his struggle for freedom and justice in America. But it is not enough to say that. It is also necessary to condemn as vigorously the conditions which continue to exist in our society, which cause individuals to feel that they have no other alternative but to turn to violence. Violent revolts grow out of revolting conditions. Victor Hugo said on one occasion, where darkness is a reality, crimes will be committed. But the guilty one is not merely he who commits the crime, but he who caused the darkness. And this must be uttered over and over again. The Negro did not cause the darkness in America. The Negro did not create slums. The Negro did not bring unemployment into being and underemployment. The Negro did not create the intolerable conditions in so many of our schools. We must honestly say that these conditions of darkness have been created by certain forces in the power structure of our nation. It is still true that a riot is the language of the unheard. And what is it that America has failed to hear? It has failed to hear that the plight of the Negro poor has worsened over the last few years. It has failed to hear that the promises of freedom and justice have not been met. And it has failed to hear that large segments of white society are more concerned about tranquility and the status quo than about justice, humanity, and equality. We've just passed through what has now come to be called the long hot summer. And every year around April or May, the talk begins anew about the long hot summer ahead. What always bothers me is that the long hot summers always come after the rather long cold winter. And the problem is that the nation has never used the winters creatively to get rid of poverty, to get rid of inadequate educational conditions, to get rid of slums. And in a real sense, our nation's summers of riots are still caused by our nation's winters of delay. And as long as justice is postponed, as long as the promises of freedom are not fulfilled, we are in danger of having these summers of social disruption. And so it is my feeling that now more than ever before, America must address itself positively, aggressively, and forthrightly to the problem of racism and all of the attendant problems of segregation and discrimination. This problem will not work itself out, although there are still those people who feel that we must sit comfortably by the wayside and wait on what they would call the coming of the inevitable. But history is a long and sometimes tragic story of the fact that privileged groups seldom, if ever, give up their privileges voluntarily. They seldom do it without strong resistance. Human progress never rolls in on the wheels of inevitability. It comes through the tireless efforts and the persistent work of dedicated individuals, and without hard work, time itself becomes an ally of the primitive forces of social stagnation. And it is the job of the civil rights movement to mobilize enough strength, to mobilize enough resources in order to bring the kind of pressure to bear that will cause our nation to confront this issue once and for all and to move on toward the solution of the problem. And it will be necessary for the Negro, as he struggles ahead, to amass the necessary political and economic power so that the kind of pressure that I am talking about can become a reality, and Congress and the other forces in power can no longer elude our demands. Now that leads me to talk about the second major evil that we face, and that is the evil of poverty. Like a monstrous octopus, it spreads its nagging, prehensile tentacles in hamlets, villages, and cities all over our world. Some two-thirds of the peoples of the world go to bed hungry at night. I've seen them with my own eyes as I've traveled in Asia and Africa and Latin America and even in our own nation, in the ghettos and in the Delta of Mississippi, for instance. I remember some time ago, Mrs. King and I had the privilege to journey to that great nation of India. And I never will forget the experience. It was a marvelous experience to greet and talk with the great leaders of India, and to talk with thousands and thousands of people all over the villages and cities of that vast country. And these experiences will remain meaningful to me as long as the cords of memory shall lengthen. But there were those depressing moments. But how can one avoid being depressed when he sees with his own eyes evidences of millions of people going to bed hungry at night? How can one avoid being depressed when he sees with his own eyes millions of people sleeping on the sidewalks at night? More than a million people sleep on the sidewalks of Bombay every night. More than 600,000 people sleep on the sidewalks of Calcutta every night. They have no beds to sleep in. They have no houses to go in. How can one avoid being depressed when he discovers that out of India's population of more than 400 million people, some 380 million make an income of less than $90 a year, and most of these people have never seen a doctor or a dentist. Conditions like these can be duplicated in so many places in the world. The problem is not only in Asia or Africa or Latin America. The problem is in our own midst. Some 10 million families in our country are poverty-stricken. Some 40 million individuals. And so often they have become invisible because our society is so affluent that it is easy to overlook the poor. Some Appalachian whites, some are Mexican Americans, some are Puerto Ricans, some are American Indians. The largest group in this poverty-stricken area in proportion to size in the population is the American Negro. By the thousands and the millions, Negroes find themselves smothering in an airtight cage of poverty in the midst of an affluent society. What we find in the Negro community is a major depression every day. I've been working in Cleveland this summer, and just to give you an illustration of the kind of depression situation that we confront all over, would like to mention the situation there. Day in and day out, when I'm there, I move through the Negro ghetto. I moved through Huff, for instance. And in the Negro community of Cleveland, the unemployment rate is about 15.8%. 58% of the young Negro men are either jobless or making income below the poverty level. This is a major depression, more staggering than the depression of the 30s. And if the whole society was experiencing what the Negro was confronting, we would find ourselves in the worst depression of our nation. And yet it is a day-to-day reality for the Negro, and there is a culture of poverty. For when the economic insecurity is there, it means bad housing conditions. 50% of the Negro families of our country live in dilapidated, deteriorating housing conditions. So many don't have wall-to-wall carpet, but wall-to-wall rats and roaches. This is the daily life of so many black men and women, boys and girls of our nation. And it's not only unemployment, it is underemployment also. The majority of poverty-stricken people in our community are working every day, but making wages so low that they cannot begin to have the basic necessities of life. Now, there is a solution to this problem. Certainly, we have the resources to deal with it. The national gross product of our country this year will reach the astounding figure of about $780 billion. The resources are here. It is a question of whether the will is here. When our country was on the verge of bankruptcy, it brought into being in the 30s what was known as the WPA, which provided jobs for all persons desirous of work. And I contend that that is needed, a kind of WPA today, which will tailor the job to the man. Something special must be done. Something that is of a compensatory nature. And for fear some would call this preferential treatment, America has given preferential treatment before. When men are taken away to the Army or the Navy, the general outlay of the armed forces, they are deprived of something. They may be deprived of an education for that moment, deprived of being with their families, deprived of growth and promotions in a particular job that they may be in. And in seeing this, the nation said that we must do something of a preferential nature. And so the nation brought into being a GI Bill of Rights. And so veterans can gain certain special treatment that others cannot gain. If they want to go to college, they gain subsidies on the basis of that GI Bill of Rights to go. They can often start a business at low interest rates, buy a house with a different interest rate structure than other persons. And I submit that it is time for our nation to develop a bill of rights for the disadvantaged, for those who are the long veterans of the long siege of denial. This is absolutely necessary if the problem is to be solved. If just 3% of our national gross product was set aside to deal with this problem, in a few years, slums could be eradicated. In a few years, schools would be better. and they would have quality. In a few years, everyone would have a job on income, and it has reached the point now where there must be jobs on income. And this is why I feel that one of the answers, along with many other people, is found in a guaranteed annual income. If the nation cannot or will not provide jobs for people, then everybody has a right to an income. If people have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, then it is absolutely necessary to have an income.
On behalf of SCRP and you, our listeners,
Dr. King was talking about economics. You've been listening to Dr. King. I just got, you know, a lot of the stuff that Dr. King was talking about, 58% joblessness among our youth, 15% among black people, period, is even higher. It's like that today. And when you look at the fact that they will say the joblessness in terms of about 31% or we're under, over from where we was and people being hurt, we are really in trouble, but it's not over. I mean, as Jesse said every week, when we fight, we win. So I think we have to decide what we're going to do here. And it's really, it's not about us. It's about the future of our children. It's about what are we going to lay down and what are we willing to fight for. And Dr. King said, a man having found something he'll die for, he's not fit to live. And everybody protects their young. Everybody. We are with our sanctuary for our young people right now. Mac Bry got shot in the face. You had Jonathan, his name was Jonathan Farrell. Farrell, who was a football player, he had an accident. He tried to get some help. He got killed. Trayvon, the boy with the music. What I want to tell you is the other night I spoke at Columbia on Thursday. And when I say blacks are still without sanctuary, both economically, physically, and every other kind of way, you tell me the difference between what happened to these young people than what happened when your mamas and your daddies had to sit there and to endure the children getting lynched. I was, if you watch 12 Years of Slavery, you read in our history, something happened that when something is going on with black people, the other black folks will walk away for fear that they're going to get them. But Dr. King gave up his whole life. When I was at Columbia the other day, Thursday night, and I want y'all to hear this very clear. Some of you came out. There's something going on in this country that's real deep. So we were watching, we had to analyze the Django. And, of course, you know I did my little piece. But we were sitting back there watching it. You had some young black men and a couple of young ladies sitting in the back making noise. They'd had something to drink, I think. So this white guy, middle-aged white guy, dressed middle-aged like he could have black us, I would say Bill Gates or somebody, where they be dressed, you know, jeans, this other stuff, you know, you can tell. So he comes back and he tells this boy, shut the F up. And I'm saying, okay, I don't know if I can deal with that. So I'm sitting there. He comes back and he grabs this young man. Now, remember, this is the dogs have been pulling on the people on the Django, eating up the man. Young folks who don't know how to deal with this stuff because they really don't know. They feel in pain and don't know how to deal with pain. And that's why sometimes you see some of the violence and stuff in them. But he had the nerve to come back and to grab the young man. Didn't I tell you to shut the... This young boy took him and body slammed his butt on the floor, and he went rolling down the aisle of the theater at Columbia. And they put them out. And I said, well, the young lady said, this is the man that started. And I said, he started it, so I went out to make sure the young men and them didn't get arrested. So when I got ready to speak on the Django, I told them about white supremacy. They just saw the whole thing of white man supremacy, thinking he can do anything to a black man. That's going on right now. And I told them that was a slap down right there. And the fact that they got rid of this, they only put him out. But they put the whole row of black people. And I started to leave, but I wanted to stay there and really talk to them. because you had a lot of young white students in there. And I told them that most of them was immigrants, so they really wouldn't even understand what I'm getting ready to say to them. When you're sitting here, and the problem with the movie was the fact that you're sitting there thinking this is the way it was. And I just went into the whole thing of repairing the damage and talking about what went on with us as a people. And it was really something, even out because they had the Django, when you looked at it, like I told them, the Klansmen didn't come out after the Klansmen were organized after the Civil War. And some other things that went on with black folks, how we don't have sanctuary and what happened, the fact that this man can get up and he can do that, and we went through the whole thing. But it was good, and some of you came out, and I was glad to hear you. But right now, blacks are in this country without sanctuary. And this is not a sadness I'm talking about. We have to feel empowered. We don't have to feel powerless because we are empowered. As I said earlier, nobody gets elected without us. But what they do is omit you so you won't know that you are powerful. You wouldn't have a Ron Emanuel if black folks had not voted and does not vote for him. You would not even have a Quinn if black folks did not vote or do not vote for him. You would not have had a president of the United States of America if black folks had not come out in record numbers in those cities that the conservatives thought was not going to come out because the president was not doing anything for black people. So they thought black folks were going to be so disenchanted that they would not come out, but black folks came out in mass. And so what happened is you have this omission. The governor of Virginia won the other day, the Democratic governor, because of black people. But they'll tell you about all of these people. They deal with all of this stuff, and they try to make black folks be irrelevant because they want you to be a midget until they get through getting ready, when they get through wiping us all out and displacing all of us so we don't be powerful. When you take a whole group of people like you did in the public housing, that's a whole group of people. That's depopulation. You have shooting and stuff on South Shore, and black folks start running, and other folks start buying the housing. I told you to follow the tracks and follow it. Cam called early and was talking about the railroads. I told y'all way back then, the railroads planned on taking people land, and they're moving toward a global community. You had Daley and Ron Emanuel over in Mexico the other day, currency and country. We talked to you about currency and country, the fact that our currency is America. Our country is America. Our continent is Africa. And until you understand that we have a right to these resources, then you're not going to fight for them. Those are your tax dollars, too. TIF dollars in those blighted communities are supposed to go to our communities. We have a right. They close down 50 schools, and we're still sitting around doing nothing, so folks keep pushing you and thinking they can do more. You have 10% blacks in the school system. The employment rate among government for black people are very low right now without sanctuary. I'm going to go back to the phone. Maceo, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you, Alderman Tillman?
I'm all right. How you doing? I'm just fine.
Well, thank you for that history lesson from your guest, the great Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King, Jr., and there were so many things that he cited in terms of the free giveaways to whites under
right.
the Homestead Act, that's what, in the Black Labor, White Wealth, that's what Dr. Claude Hansen called it. And then also...
And he also said in there that by 2013 we was going to be obsolete if we didn't do something. Didn't he say that?
He sure did.
Mm-hmm.
He sure did. But then Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King was talking about the Civil Rights Bill of 1875, which was instituted under the Reconstruction. And there were so many things, and it was the result of black legislators, too, you know, putting these things in place.
Right, and you know what, Maceo? And then they did Reconstruction and wiped us out. They doing the same thing. This is not new what they're doing to us. That's why we don't know our history. We keep letting it happen over and over again.
You got to know that history. Got to know it, because then after Reconstruction, when the whites took back over the South, then they started imposing state rules
state
again.
State rights.
State rights, that's
mm-hmm,
right.
Mm-hmm.
But... In reference to, the TIF, what you were saying early on, that belongs to those communities that you cited. And our people, it will be a great stimulus for that community. So I advocate as a solution that our people start writing to these aldermen, calling into these aldermen, a massive write-in, call-in campaign, not asking them, but demanding that those TIF monies be spent the way that they're supposed to be spent.
I agree with that. And you know what else I think we need to be doing, Mesa? We got to now put back on the radar, H.R. 40. We need to demand that, and we need to demand that we have a Marshall Plan. We got to. I've been trying to come up with what can we do to collectively across this country begin to push to help our condition. And I'm convinced that H.R. 40 for the study, a Marshall Plan to rebuild our communities, and that's what we got to do. We talk about a Marshall Plan that's going to cover health, education, finance, and all of the other things, and I think we got to do that. I mean, we need to get it on the social media. We need to get it all out there, and we need to be as strong about that as these people talking about immigration. We need to be talking about a Marshall Plan for our community.
That's right, and Dr. King talked about that in a 1965 interview, as you well know, where he talked about $50 billion over a span of, I believe, 10 years for that specific purpose.
Right. But you know, that's why they killed Dr. King. Dr. King was murdered because Dr. King began to talk about the economics. And then that's why, and so for somebody to try to reduce his life to him being frightened of lightning or something, so that mountaintop mess they had written, it was a disgrace. But for us to understand, if we understand who Dr. King was and is and study him, we'll be ready. But I think we got to really start moving now, Macy. So thank you, Macy.
Thank you for playing that. Love you.
Love you, too. Yeah, I think we got to begin to start moving here. But I do know I'm going to play a little of this in a second for you. A change going to come in a few minutes. Karma from Elwood.
Good morning. Good morning, Ms. Tillman. I mean, I am to tears. I mean, people need to wake up.
Right.
And I'm so glad that you're there.
Thank you.
I mean, because people need to wake up and stop being scared.
They be scared.
I mean, people need to stop and wake up and listen to you. I tell all my friends to turn you on every Saturday. Get educated. Ms. Tillman, you are godsend.
Thank you.
And, oh, my God, I'm just to tears listening to Martin Luther King. I'm a baby of the civil rights.
Yes, yes.
And
well,
Carmen,
we can do anything right now. We have got to focus and fight. But we got to be focused. We got to be focused because one thing I tell people is that we all came down different roads, but we had one thing. That was the liberation of black people, whether it was the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, whether it was CORE, whether it was SNCC, SCLC.
Yes.
All of our organizations. But our goal was the liberation of black people. As I tell people all the time, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Dr. King was best of friends. Folks might not know that, but they were that. So we have
Yes, Ms. Tillman.
We got to get focused.
Thank you so much for being here for us.
Thank you.
I am all in.
Okay.
I am all in. I am not afraid.
Thank you. Well, I want everybody to start putting on their Facebook everywhere that we got to get focused and we got to fight for a Marshall Plan and H.R. 40, and black folks got to start fighting for that. Thank you so much.
Yes, and when you say it's all about taking the land, people had better wake up.
I'm telling you.
People had better wake up.
It's about the land, and the railroad is taking a bunch of it now, and they're taking it. And let me tell you something. Ron Emanuel is playing a game on black folks. And
I did not vote for him. I was not rope-a-dope into that.
Thank you so much, Karma.
Thank you.
We have got to. Nobody's going to, if you don't demand respect, you don't get respect. It's just that simple. Belinda, how you doing? Turn your radio down. Turn your radio down, Belinda.
Oh, I'm sorry. My question was.
Turn your radio down.
Hello?
You turn your radio down?
Yes.
Okay.
It's down.
Okay.
In the area where they close all those schools down, what happened to the property taxes? Because I saw where they closed down a big hospital out in the suburbs, and the property taxes that they had collected from the people that lived in the area, they got refunds. So
I don't know, but I know my property taxes went up, and I own a building, in my home, and my property taxes went up. And right now, see, nobody is paying us any attention because we're being quiet and letting everybody jump in front of us.
You know, on your property tax bill, you're paying for these schools.
Of course we are.
Where is the money?
Well, that's the question. Belinda won't know where's the money. Thank you, Belinda. Where is the money, Belinda said? I know one thing. We're going to get focused and we're going to fight. A change got to come. Dr. King said a change got to come. I want to play just a little bit. And I'll be back to you, y'all. The board is lit up. It's been lit up all morning. Just hang in there. I'll be to you in a minute.
It's been
afraid to die. We got to fight. Negroes who allow themselves to be used by the man. Get away from them. They don't know what they got is based off of somebody else's blood.
But he winds up.
Yeah, that's them folks.
Knocking me.
Yeah.
Like that on my knees.
But get on up, y'all. We got to fight. Get around them kind of Negroes. But it's a change gonna come. A change gonna come, y'all. I'm gonna try to empty this board before I got 15 minutes. Y'all gotta help me out here, y'all. I'm gonna try to get it through real quick. So y'all gotta help me out. BJ.
Dorothy, God loves you so much, and so do I. I admire you so much. You know what I really miss, Dorothy?
But
is Dorothy Tillman's Wilson Pages Book Club, Dorothy. I learned so much there, and I was
we get through. Well, we get through with this other struggle we deal with Harold Washington Culture Center, and then we're going to open it back up. But we just kind of hanging on with that right now, okay?
Well, look, Dorothy, I'm going to help you deal with that, and I promise you publicly right now what I'm going to do, because you know what? Well, be not for you, I probably wouldn't even still be alive, or I might have been totally crazy, because I have suffered for years. I'll be 70 years old on my birthday next month, okay?
Okay.
Live up to Will and Witherspoon and an older person, and also Perry, her birthday. But listen, this is so important, Dorothy. What I didn't even get involved with politics years ago. I thought, like Mr. S.B. Fuller, I could become a millionaire through business.
Well, I did have you to read that book, BJ. I did put that book on. Yes, I have a book.
In my hand. And listen, it can be done even now. But you know what we got to do? The book was led by the Holy Spirit. And that's what made Mr. Fuller rich at least of young. And Brother Benson led by the Holy Spirit to make him rich. Well,
okay.
T.D. Jakes, a lot of people don't know, he got this
BJ,
I can do some things.
BJ, I got a lit up board, and I know y'all been waiting a long time. Let me just kind of empty it because I played Dr. King. Thank you, and let's call back next week. We can do it, y'all. We can do it. I promise y'all we can do it. We can do it. Georgia, how you doing?
Good morning, Alderman Tillman.
Good morning.
Where you want me to meet you at?
Well, I think we got to do something here. We got to start on our Facebook. We got to let folks know that we have got to now. We're going to take it to Washington. We got to let them folks in Washington.
Whatever you need.
We got to let these folks know that we want H.R. 40 out, and we want a Marshall Plan put in place for the black community. We want it. And that was the whole thing around dealing with the whole Reparation Orton. So that's what we got to do. We can't be scared. Folks out there going to jail for immigration, marching for that. No,
and
we got to fight for this.
Family.
Huh?
I want you to know I ain't never scared.
I love it. Let me go. I love it. I'll talk to you next
week. I love you, my sister. Stay black.
I tell y'all, we have got to do what we got to do here. Charla.
Hi, Alderwoman Tillman. How are you doing this morning?
I'm fine. How you doing?
I'm just fine. I wanted to know, I know you're a fan of the blues. Are you still interested in trying to make bringing the blues to the South Side? And are you all?
Well, you know, we were trying to do an entertainment district on 47th Street, but it was a whole area of entertainment we were doing. But, you know, that's because I had put together a redevelopment plan for that. Let me talk so I can have more time to talk about it next week. You listen, and I'm going to talk more about that. Just know that once I left, it got kind of pushed under the rug.
I know, but are you interested in working with the group to help bring that back and with the Washington Cultural Center be a site where we could
Will you hold on, Ebony, get her number. Put on hold, because I want to try to empty this board right now. Ebony going to talk to you. Put it on hold for me, Courtney. Line one, put it on hold for me. Courtney, put line one on for Ebony. Sal, how you doing this morning?
Just fine, Dorothy. Listen.
I got 7 minutes.
King said, time is the co-conspirator to social injustice. And it's so key.
Yes.
Some time ago, Dorothy, I suggested that we use your stage to do a play on H.R. 240 as a way of telling the story and educating us about what that is all about. Sometimes you have to actually show people the picture, and that stage could serve as that now. Mm-hmm. I want to be in the play. I want to be the person who walks around cleaning up and teaching people the difference between dirt and earth.
Okay, now,
we're talking.
Okay, Sal, I got like 6 minutes, and I want to try to at least get 4 more calls in.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you so much. I don't have the, she giving me my time, telling me to, I mean, get, she came to tell me I got to go. Doris, how you doing this morning? Doris?
Hello. Hey, my sister. How are you?
I'm fine. How you doing?
Okay, I'm like Georgia. Look, where will you be? Where can I meet you? Where can I join you? What can I do?
Well,
I'm ready.
Okay, we've got to do everybody who understands social media, start putting it out there that we want H.R. 40 for slavery, the study of slavery, and we want to have a Marshall Plan put together to build our community. Let's start this social movement on the Internet, and as I go around these colleges and stuff, we're talking to these students. Let's get ready. As Jess has said, that when we fight, we win. So let's do it. Keep on listening, okay?
Okay, but we need to know when you're going to be at these colleges and things. So
well, you know, I mentioned it on VON. I had a lot of VON audience that came to Columbia the other night, but I'll make sure I update and make sure y'all know, okay?
Please.
Thank you. Thank you.
Black.
I got about 4 minutes ago, and I'm trying to enter this board. Y'all, I'm trying to get all y'all in. How you doing, Natalie?
Hi, Dorothy. How are you? You know what? I'm going to tell you, it's a time for us to do like what the Tea Partiers have done and create a movement or a party with.
Oh, we got to keep ready to move. But I think what black folks mess up, and we're going to talk politics next week, is that we stay in one place and be taken for granted. We got to be
right. Everywhere.
We got to fight back. Let's talk about it next week. Thank you, Natalie. Thank you so much. I'm trying to empty the board. Kathy, how you doing this morning?
Hi. Are you there?
I'm here. Hurry up.
Okay, I just want to know, and I listen to you every week. I want to know when and where. People are ready. All we keep saying is we need.
Well,
I know it takes time, but where, when? People are ready to do.
All y'all ready, call in next week, and we got to be focused. And we got to move on what we move on. We can't be scattered. We got to be focused.
Right. We need direction, though. We need a concrete place where we going.
Yeah, because
where and when.
Okay, Kathy. Thank you so much. One of the things we got to do, y'all, the two things is pushing for H.R. 40. I was looking at Canton the other day. I'm going to see them. Look, H.R. 40 we got to push for, and we got to push for this Marshall Plan to rebuild our community. They rebuilt Europe. They're bringing all these other folks in this country. They're giving them our tax dollars. We have got to fight for a Marshall Plan. That was the whole thing around the reparation ordinance, was to gather the information so that we can make America do what they're supposed to do. Because what have happened over the last 5 years, we lost Tulsa. We was fighting to get Tulsa reparation. We're able to get them repaired. H.R. 40 went under. All of the stuff that we were moving on, this kind of went down. We lost economic, education, and politically, we've lost. You've been listening to Talk of Chicago 69WN. This has been Coffee, Tea, and a Conversation with me, Dorothy Wright Tillman. And we're not playing, y'all. We're talking about if you deal with social media, start putting it out there, y'all. H.R. 40 and a Marshall Plan. And what we need to go is to Washington. We don't have time to be going. We're not going to have time to just be going to jail for other folks. Go for ourselves. There's a link on my Facebook. Also, don't forget Saturday today at 12 o'clock, 471 West 127th Street. For demonstration to abolish red cameras. And next week I'll talk more about the 25th for Harold Washington. They're going to be going to the cemetery at 11 o'clock to lay a wreath on his grave. Meet us all at Oakwood on the 25th at 11 a.m. to lay a wreath on Harold's grave. 773-643-4828. We'll talk more until now. See you next week, y'all. Reparations now. Let's repair the damage. Love you.
Around.
Talk of Chicago is 60.